It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo is right, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we are going to have some great conversations today. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can find all of the recaps of the shows. The podcast can be found there. What you need to do is just click on the picture and everything will come up when you do that. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter. You'll get all of the first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast and our most recent op-eds. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And we would appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like. I know we're all trying to figure out what we're going to be doing with all of this social media, but we do appreciate that if you'll do that as well. Want to thank each and every one of you for listening. We are in historic times here in America, and I appreciate each one of you listeners. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence today. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And also like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, and all the folks here at Crawford Broadcasting. Producer Steve, hump day. It just seems like I just came in the door on Monday morning. I cannot believe how fast time is going.
I know the feeling, but yeah, we got a pretty full show here, so we're like the Egyptian mummy. We're pressed for time.
Yes, and I will try to not talk too fast. When I look at such a jam-packed show, I can find myself speaking so quickly that I've actually had people say, could you slow it down just a little bit? Want to say thank you to this for the sponsor of this show, and that is Helen J. Mitchell. She's my friend. She's my she's a patriot, and I so appreciate her sponsoring this show. We're going to be talking with Patty here in just a moment. She is our researcher for the show. She does a lot of research for a lot of different things, and we'll be going through what's happening in these battleground states regarding the Electoral College, the election. Second segment, Teresa Watson. She's the chair of the Boulder County GOP. We're going to talk about some possible voting irregularities in Boulder County. And, of course, Jason McBride at the bottom of the hour, Lauren Levy, we'll chat with him. And then Priscilla Ron, she is a teacher, a former principal. We want to talk about what's happening with the education of our kids. I will jump right over here and give you our quote for the day. And this is from, let's see, where do I have this, Steve? Here we go. John Adams. He was an American statesman, president of the United States. He was a leader during the American Revolutionary War. He was born in 1735. He died on the 4th of July, 1826, 50 years after the Declaration of Independence, or we declared our independence. And he and Thomas Jefferson died on the same day, which is so interesting. And this is what he said. He said, "Children should be educated and instructed in the principles of freedom."
Whoa.
Wouldn't that be a good idea instead of some of the junk that we're teaching our kids these days? But two headlines I just wanted to hit, and that is the Colorado legislature is doing a special session, and they are going to demand that counties comply with their coronavirus restrictions to get the money. You talk about a shakedown to get to access relief money. It's a shakedown is what it is, Steve.
And it defies description in terms of the big picture here. They have caused most of this, need in the business world. They have caused it. And now they want to turn around. Well, here's some money for you, but you got to play by the rules. And
it's like the mob.
Yeah.
It's like the mob. The other thing is an L.A. County supervisor. Let's see her. Sheila Kuhl, she voted to ban outdoor dining in L.A. County's 31,000 restaurants over COVID-19 safety concerns. And then guess what? She went to a restaurant in Santa Monica and did some outdoor dining. You talk about hypocrisy.
I think she's Michael Hancock's aunt.
Okay, we've got to jump over here to Patty Kurgan because she's got a lot of information. She does research for the show. And Patty, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim.
And you're gonna have a little extra time here because we'll push that a little bit. So let's jump in here. What's going on, Patty?
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for having me. I just wanted to clarify Attorney General Barr's statements yesterday. The Associated Press came out and quoted Barr as saying that, quote, to date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election. The mainstream media just took off with it. And what we were reading last night, I picked up an article this morning for the Epoch Times. And there's a clarification there. And there was a spokesperson from the Department of Justice, and this is according to CBS News reporter Catherine Herridge. And the DOJ spokesman said, quote, some media outlets have incorrectly reported that the Department of Justice has concluded its investigation of election fraud and announced an affirmative finding of no fraud in the election. This is not what the Associated Press reported, nor what the Attorney General stated. The department will continue to receive and vigorously pursue all specific and credible allegations of fraud as expeditiously as possible. So I'm glad we've come out with this clarification, and I'm glad that it's not set in stone that the DOJ is just done with the election fraud. The legal team for Trump did come out. They posted it up on a website, and I'm just going to say the most important thing out of that statement coming from the attorneys is, nonetheless, we will continue our pursuit of the truth through the judicial system and state legislators and continue toward the Constitution's mandate in ensuring that every legal vote is counted and every illegal vote is not. And I think that's what the people of the U.S. is looking for. We just
Most
want
definitely.
Legal votes.
Most
All legal
definitely.
Votes count.
And so illegal votes not counted.
Exactly. So we've been talking about different states. We're going to shift over to Michigan today because they had a hearing at the in front of the Michigan State Senate. There were many people who testified. And again, this supports what we've been hearing in the news about irregularities. There was a woman who said she was a poll observer at the TCF Center in Detroit on Election Day, and she testified in front of the hearing that she saw numerous military ballots that looked like Xerox copies and were all allegedly marked for Democrat Joe Biden. The woman, who only identified herself as Patty and said she was 9 years worth of experience, told the lawmakers that, quote, military ballots looked like they were all exactly the same Xerox copies of the ballot. They were all for Biden across the board. There wasn't a single Trump vote. None of the voters were registered, and election workers had to manually enter the names and addresses and a birth date of 1/1/2020, which would override the system and allow them to enter non-registered voters, of which I saw several throughout the day. The woman said that when she and other GOP observers tried to challenge them, election officials would tell us no. And I just want to point out, this is coming from the Epoch Times. So that's one testimony. There was on Twitter, somebody put out a testimony by Phil O'Halloran. He's a Michigan resident for 34 years and a GOP poll watcher dating back to the 1990s, stated that following under oath, while ballots are generally transported by two people, on more than one occasion, there was just a single transporter. At the departure point, which is the Department of Elections, the loading of the vehicle was rarely, if ever, supervised by officials. We saw no transfer paperwork, no ballot with clipboards logging the departure and arrival times, or any logging of the type or number of ballots on arrival at the TCF Center. And this is in Detroit. There was an expert witness, his name is Russell James Ramslin, Jr., who works with the Allied Security Operations Group. In the past, he has worked with NASA and MIT. Ramslin said there were four physically impossible spikes totaling almost 385,000 ballots allegedly processed in a combined interval of 2 hours and 38 minutes. He concluded that, quote, Dominion alone is responsible for the injection or fabrication of 290,000 illegal votes in Michigan that must be disregarded. This is nearly twice the number of ballots by which Biden is leading Trump, which is approximately 150,000 votes. They had another expert.
Patty, just a quick question on that. Do they know who those 290,000 illegal votes, who those went for? Did they go for Biden? Can that be proved, or do you know?
On that one, I can't answer specifically.
Okay.
With the military votes, the witness at the hearing specifically stated that all the military ballots that she saw that were coming in were for Biden. And she said they looked like, again, Xerox copies.
Wow. Dating ourselves when we say Xeroxed.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Oh.
Next.
And then there was another expert testimony by a Dr. Navid Kershavaris Nia. He's a PhD in engineering and technology and received advanced training from the CIA, the NSA, and the DHS. In his sworn statement, and remember, these people are under oath. They are swearing that they will tell the truth. He says he believes that USB memory cards were used to facilitate administrative backdoor access to disrupt polling operations and impact ballot counting across Michigan, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Wisconsin. And then someone came up there. It was an affidavit, and she submitted it, or he. And at this point in time, we do not know the name or the personal information. It was redacted from the paperwork. Remember, some of these people are being threatened, so I think that's why that was redacted. And according to this affidavit, the digital forensics analysis shows there is unambiguous evidence that Dominion voter systems and Edison research have been accessible and were certainly compromised by rogue actors such as Iran and China. So that all came out of the Michigan testimony yesterday. I'd like to go back to Pennsylvania that we've spoken about. And yesterday there was a report, again, coming from the Epoch Times. There was as many as 288,000 ballots for the election that disappeared in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, after being transported by truck from New York, according to Phil Klein, the director of the legal group Thomas More Society's Amistad Project. He said that he received evidence that between 130,000 to the 280,000 completed ballots for the 2020 general election had been shipped from Bethpage, New York, before the ballots and the trailer in which they were shipped disappeared on October 21st. Klein cited statements from a U.S. Postal Service subcontractor who he described as a whistleblower. Klein also asserted in a statement that Postal Service workers were engaged in widespread illegal efforts to influence the election. Mm-hmm. At least one whistleblower said that they transported thousands of pre-filled ballots across state lines, which, if true, would be a federal crime. One of the whistleblowers has been identified. His name is Jesse Morgan. He's a truck driver for the USPS. He's a subcontractor. And he said at the news conference that he was driving a truck filled with up to 280,000 ballots in October 21st, and that the ballots disappeared from a USPS depot in Lancaster after he dropped it off there. Morgan added that Postal Service personnel exhibited odd behaviors that grossly deviated from normal procedures and behavior on that day. The driver said he was transporting completed mail-in ballots with addresses in Harrisburg, but he had to deliver his ballots in Lancaster, which he felt was unusual. That was before the trailer disappeared. There's also another USPS whistleblower named Ethan Pease of Madison, Wisconsin, and he said during the news conference that he works as a USPS subcontractor and alleged that he was told the post office was planning to backdate tens of thousands of mail-in ballots before the November 3rd election. Pease and Klein asserted that it was a bid to circumvent the submission deadline for ballots.
Hey, wow.
Right. So I know we're limited on time. Those are my highlights for today.
Or low lights, whichever we want to call
low light, right, I guess I should say low lights. You're correct. And I just wonder if people have time tomorrow on December 3rd, Nevada is holding a hearing. There's been a lot of talk where people were actually paid to vote. And so that will be interesting.
Boy, Patty, this is really important information. We will talk to you again tomorrow morning. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 24 hours. And this is Patty Kergan. She's a researcher, an author. She's an author in the book Unmasked 2020, contributed a chapter to that. Patty, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. Bye.
Okay, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, one of my great partners is Hooters Restaurants. They have five locations, Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. With all the craziness that's going on with all of these restrictions, they have patios where you can actually sit outside. You can dine. And some days you'll have to certainly put your coat on, but they have heaters there. And so you can get together with friends at Hooters Restaurants, which is a great thing. But they have all kinds of to-go specials as well. We need to make sure that we support these businesses, support each and every one of these sponsors that I have. And the show today is sponsored by a great friend of mine, that is Helen J. Mitchell. She is a patriot. But be sure and check out HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with the Boulder County GOP chair, Teresa Watson, on was there anything crazy going on in Boulder County? We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter there as well. All of the podcasts, recaps of the show, all kinds of great information there on the website. And thank you to Helen J. Mitchell for her sponsorship of the show. She is a friend. She is a patriot, and greatly appreciate her for doing that. On the line with me is Teresa Watson. She is the chair of the Boulder County GOP. Teresa Watson, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kim. Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
What's going on up in Boulder County? What happened during the election?
Well, we are the gold standard up here in Boulder County. let's clarify that. So everything that we do should be transparent, and there should be a great chain of custody that we should be able to see all the processes and know exactly how our ballots are being processed. You would think that of a gold standard.
Well, who gave Boulder County the gold standard?
That started with Hillary Hall when our county started the RLA, which is the risk limiting audit.
Okay.
And so we were considered this gold standard of processing mail-in ballots, and that we had this wonderful audit. Well, that audit has turned into a bureaucrats auditing themselves.
Oh, that works out well.
Supposed to be an citizen oversight, an audit board. The first round this year, we had 10 mistakes, 10 issues, discrepancies. Our audit boards saw no changes being made. We were not involved. So it's a bureaucrat run here up in Boulder County, the risk limiting audit.
Okay.
And that's basically what we're dealing with is Molly Fitzpatrick has actually said that she wants less citizen oversight, and she is proving that this election especially.
Okay, and so I assume she's the county clerk and recorder, yes?
Yes.
Okay, and Democrat?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe her affiliation might be you, but she actually, you know, I don't know if you know her background. She was the director of New Era on the CU campus for 10 years.
And what's the New Era?
Ooh, that is a George Soros financially backed group who focus on campuses and student getting student voters.
And now she's very the county clerk and recorder Boulder.
Yes.
Got
They've
it.
Turned into a very creepy group, too. We watched them very intently because the campus was very empty. We got to watch their maneuvers and see how they operated on the campus with students. And we actually have a student who felt intimidated, and she's ready to talk if we need her to talk.
Teresa, okay. Boy, I think that we have a lot longer interview we're going to have to book with you. Okay. Let's say we have just about 4 minutes right now on what you saw with this election. Hit the lowlights, if you will.
Well, we had watchers who were barred and banned from seeing certain things, especially like the UOCAVA military overseas ballots, completely done by staff, very little judge bipartisanship involved with that. Very concerning, you know, that whole chain of custody, that's a big one. The in-person voting ballots, they come into the centralized ballot processing. That chain of custody is broken. Those ballots sit in an unlocked box in a room.
Oh, really?
And I asked why they aren't being processed. Oh, we wait till we have so many, you know, and then we scan through. So a lot of issues with the chain of custody, I would say. And then also, of course, I don't know if you know this, but we had two of our SIG verified judges fired and accused of rejecting too many signatures. And then we have the DA of Boulder County interviewing judges even 2 weeks after the election.
And that's why these DA races are so important. They really are. I actually had talked to some women that had been working at the polls and doing signature verification there in Boulder. And they said that they were told that they could not go above a certain number of challenges on signature verification. This is I heard it straight from that person, that they were told that they could only have a certain amount.
Right. Well, that's our gold standard also. You know, we got to stay under a certain percentage of rejected signatures so that we, you know, Boulder County looks like they're really, you know, on top of things and they've got it all together. You know, this makes them look good, I guess, in their minds. Yeah, so the rejection rate is below the state level, always has been for a long time.
And it's not because it's a gold standard. It's because they're told that they can't challenge more than X number of signatures. And, of course, we are told with these mail-in ballots that the signatures are verified here in Colorado. We're hearing in other states they're not. But we're realizing that there's different ways to get around, I would say, election integrity and transparency, and you've seen that firsthand up there in Boulder. I know, Teresa, that you and the Boulder County GOP, you've done a lot of important work. I think it was a past election that regarding these election judges, normally there would be a Republican and there would be a Democrat. And my understanding is that in Boulder County, what had happened is there were Democrats that were re-registering as Republicans prior to election time and prior to, a significant amount of time before so that they could then apply to be election judges. And you guys got wind of that and got that stopped. Is that correct?
Yes. I believe that was when Peg Cage was our chairman, and we discovered that issue. That was when Hillary Hall was still there, and that was resolved. Not that everything is as it should be still. One other issue I think is important is that one of the issues we were having in signature verification was multiple layers of of signature review. In fact, going to third and fourth level review to get the signature decisions that the staff and the elections wanted from our judges.
So it would be challenged, and then it would be challenged again, challenged again, challenged again, until they got the result they wanted. Is that what I am hearing you say?
That's right. And not only challenged over and over, but even challenged by staff, which was completely unheard of.
Okay. Okay. Teresa, we're going to have to book another interview with you. What is your final thought that you would like to leave with listeners today? And I'm talking with Teresa Watson. She is the chair of the Boulder County GOP. What's the final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
That this is our election. We're the citizens. We should be overseeing all processes, all parts of the election. And we have to stand up and say and demand it, actually, of our county clerks.
Well, and I am encouraged that we are seeing people step up across the country on this. But with that, I would recommend that each of us start to connect with our county clerks and say that we would like to make sure that we have election integrity, make sure that the Dominion voting systems, which were used in 62 of the 64 counties here in Colorado, that those were secure. And had thought about going to our legislators for that, but I actually think that the county clerk is the person that people need to be reaching out to on this, Teresa.
Yep, and we found glitches. We saw glitches. We saw them with our own eyes, the computers doing really funky, weird things in front of our eyes. We saw it at the presidential primary, and then our county clerk did not use the computer. We did it all by hand in June, and then we went back to it in November, and we saw the same issues over and over.
Okay, Teresa, we will get you rebooked on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet. Thanks,
okay. Jim. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, how's your blood pressure this morning?
It's about normal for the last month.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. I think mine's a little high after talking to Patty and Teresa. So what's the market doing?
Well, when I said it was normal, I mean it's high.
Oh, I got it. It's been steady. Oh, I get that.
Steadily high for the last month.
I get it.
Yeah.
What did the market do yesterday?
Actually, not too bad. The Dow gained about 185. It didn't quite bust out to a new high. It's like at 29,800. NASDAQ had a good day. It was up about 156. And I would say, looking at the chart on NASDAQ at this point, it's pretty cleanly broken out of a sideways pattern that's been going on since August. And it has made it to new highs, so that's pretty exciting to see. Now, Kim, we've talked a little bit about Roths on the show again recently, and taxes are a subject that most everybody is interested in. But, you know, in retirement, you want to keep your expenses as low as possible, and one of those expenses can certainly be taxes,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
So, just as a quick example, you know, if you have a let's say in retirement, you're married, between you and your spouse, you get about $50,000 of Social Security benefits. You have another, let's say $20,000 of, you know, just income from investments or interest or that type of thing. I mean, your tax, you know, that's $70,000 worth of income coming in, and your tax is basically zero because of your standard deductions and that type of thing. But if you have an IRA that you have to draw from to either because you're forced to or you need a little bit more income, let's say you have to take $3,000 a month out of that IRA, all of a sudden, your taxes jump from zero to about $7,500 a year.
Okay.
And that's just on the federal, Kim. And a lot of that is due to the way that Social Security benefits get taxed very, very quickly when other taxable income starts to come into the picture. So, I mean, if you really look at it, $7,500 worth of taxes on just that other $3,000 a month in income or $36,000 a year, I mean, that's a 21% tax rate on that money. Plus, you're going to pay, you know, whatever it is for state and local and all that. So one question you could ask is, would you be able to convert, let's say, $36,000 or any amount to Roth now for less than the 21% tax rate that it may cost you later?
Well, that's a very important question. And what you're talking about is a Roth IRA. And if you can reduce your taxes, that's money in your pocket. And recommend that people take a look at this between now and the end of the year. Give you a call, Jason McBride at Presidential Wealth Management, to do a discovery session on trying to lower taxes. What's your phone number, Jason?
Hey, give us a call to learn about this or other tax reducing strategies. But it's 303-694-1600, Kim. That's 303-694-1600.
I like more money in my pocket. Jason McBride, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great one, Kim.
Thanks. Thanks so much. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll talk with Lauren Levy quickly about what's happening in the mortgage arena, and then Priscilla Ron, who is a teacher, a former principal, about the education of our children. This show is brought to you by Helen J. Mitchell, my friend and patriot. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, KimMunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. This show is brought to you by my friend and patriot, Helen J. Mitchell. Greatly appreciate that, as well as be sure and check out my website for all of my partners who bring this show to you. I so appreciate each and every one of them. Priscilla Ron is a teacher. She's a former principal. She has run for elected office for CU Regent, and it's just great to have her on the show. Welcome, Priscilla.
Good morning. Hi.
Priscilla, I'm just concerned about our kids. I'm talking to so many parents regarding this whole COVID-19 Wuhan China virus reaction disruption and what's happened with education. Parents are, you know, people are just, teachers and parents and students are stepping up, but I hear people or I hear parents saying that I'm concerned my kids aren't learning. What do you see, Priscilla?
Yeah, definitely. First, I want to acknowledge that there are, you know, a lot of teachers and parents who are scared, but I'm so encouraged to share the data, you know, and the data is what really needs to drive these decisions. Definitely, we have students who are suffering in the classroom. We have students who are experiencing depression. We have staff and faculty, you know, Zoom meetings with individual students because they just can't handle this platform and they're becoming depressed and we're not able to deliver rigorous instruction to all of our students in the way that we need to because of all of the different roadblocks that happen, whether it be technology issues, access to Wi-Fi, it's noisy, having to babysit younger siblings. I mean, there are all kinds of things that are disrupting the flow and the level of rigor that we're having to deliver to our students.
Boy, this makes it really difficult for teachers, doesn't it?
It really does, because we have a lot of teachers who want to be in the classroom, and I can speak at least for Endeavor Public Schools, where there are schools that have successfully been delivering in-person instruction since the beginning of the fall. And so it's been proven that we can do this in a safe way. So I would love to encourage more parents and teachers to talk about a plan. I mean, because we haven't really been hearing conversations about reopening schools. We've only been hearing about closing schools. And I think that's the wrong conversation to have at this point.
I was talking with a guest yesterday, and that was Rose Puglisi, who is a Mesa County commissioner, who they want to get Mesa County opened up. And she said something that I thought was really important. She said, we want to get to yes. And I'm seeing with a lot of these politicians and bureaucrats that they want to stay at no. Are you seeing that?
Absolutely. I mean, look at New York City schools. Mayor de Blasio closed the schools. 2 weeks later, they're reopening. Now, has the data changed? Absolutely not. We're right in the middle of cold and flu season. I knew it. I called it back in the summer. I said, you know what? What are they going to do when they say we're going to go back to school in October, right in the middle of cold and flu season? So what happened? The parents were like, enough is enough with the politics, and they forced New York City schools to reopen after being closed for 2 weeks. So that tells you that this is a political issue. Now, I want to reiterate that I do believe COVID is real. I do believe that it can have serious symptoms. I have close family and friends who have been impacted, who thank God have recovered. But this is a serious virus if you get it, depending on how your body responds to it. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't have protocols in place. If every teacher and every school were committed to following some safety procedures, we could totally have a successful school year.
What about teachers that are concerned about being exposed to COVID? What's your thoughts about that?
Well, when we look at the data and we look at contact tracing and we listen to the infectious disease experts, it all points to the fact that the spread of COVID among and from children isn't really big at all. I mean, look at the data. So in New Jersey, where their spread has been the hardest hit, not a single child, school-age child, has died from COVID. In California, the big state of California, only two children. And we don't know, just by looking at the numbers, if a child has died from COVID or of COVID, right? Because we're seeing, like, we just don't have that data. But the data is encouraging. Only 123 children nationwide out of, what, 300 and something billion people that live in America.
Or million. Yeah, 330
million. Right. I mean, so if we can practice safe protocols within the school and start by limiting the amount of times that children are moving, we can continue to limit how adults are meeting in the building, like, because right now we're doing all of our meetings through technology, because it's the adult to adult transmission that is more likely. But we still have a 99.9% recovery rate. I mean, like, it's really I think we should be talking about other ways to keep ourselves safe and say yes and have safety protocols. If you do get COVID, what are going to be the next steps with your HR, you know, and taking sick leave, these types of things. But saying no to in-person learning is actually damaging our kids more than it is helping them.
And let's just talk a little bit about people say, I tested positive for COVID, which with the media, it immediately takes people to, they think, oh my gosh, it's a death sentence. Well, you and I both now in our sphere of the people that we travel with, I've heard people say that they have tested positive. I have had I had somebody on the show just recently, she and her husband both got COVID. They didn't feel great for a few days, but they got through it, and that's without treatments. There's now treatments for that as well. So when somebody says I tested positive for COVID, that they and have we ever before Priscilla, tested healthy people for something that, for a virus? I mean, people may have the flu and they didn't know it. I mean, we've never, ever in our country tested for healthy people for something. I think that's kind of political.
I still have a lot of questions about what, you know, because someone told me COVID, the flu is a strain of COVID, right? So could you have, does this test differentiate between COVID-19 and a different strain of COVID? I haven't been able to find an answer. I do know that when someone says, yes, I've tested positive, that the symptoms can range from nothing at all to death. I mean, and everything in between. We just don't know until you get the virus how your body's going to respond. And I'm not a doctor. This is just like me having been experiencing friends and families like you and everybody else, what these symptoms look like in individuals. And again, thank God with zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D, lots of fluids, getting outside for a few minutes a day and trying to, you know, do a little bit of walking and exercising and sleep and chicken soup. These are the things that people can do to help their body start fighting that infection.
Well, and again, as we talk about testing for COVID, and the more testing that you do, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that then your numbers are going to get higher. You're going to have higher numbers. And I'm so frustrated with this then being used to get to no instead of trying to get to yes. Priscilla, Ron, let's go to break. Priscilla is a teacher, a former principal. She has run for elected office, had run for CU regent, which... appreciate you doing that as well, Priscilla. But let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Before we do that, though, another one of my great partners is Castlegate Knife and Tool. They're located in Sedalia, Colorado, and they're family-owned business. We are in the Christmas season now, and I think I need a little taste of Americana, and Sedalia is a great little place to go. They're just down Santa Fe 285 in between Castle Rock and the metro area, and I would recommend that you go out and take a look at castlegate.com. If you can't get out there, go to their website. They have updated it with all of their products. That's castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. Be sure and check that out. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Priscilla Ron.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. All of our show recaps, podcasts are there. Just click on the picture. That'll take you to that. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can do that at the website. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. On the line with me is Priscilla Ron. This show is brought to you by Helen J. Mitchell, my friend and patriot. And Priscilla is a teacher, a former principal, had stepped up to run for elected office. And Priscilla, you also have a really remarkable story that I wanted to share with people. And that is your father is a Vietnam veteran and your mother immigrated from Korea. And I had the great honor to interview them for my America's Veteran Story show. But your mother told a story at the age of 12 years old when the North Koreans were... and hopefully I get this right, were taking over Seoul, Korea, that she and her sister hopped a train to get to safety. They were hungry, and she was 12 years old. She had run track, and she hopped a train to get to safety. It's a remarkable story, Priscilla.
Absolutely. So my aunt was about 16 years older than my mom, and by that time, when the Korean War started, she had a little baby. She was married. She had never seen her. She had never seen her brother-in-law after that war started, because they would take the men. And so my grandmother, my uncle, my mom, and my aunt all had to leave Seoul on the one bridge that hadn't been destroyed. So they were walking, and they found a house that was abandoned to sleep in the night. And then the next morning, during the night, it actually got bombed. This is the crazy thing. I don't know if she told you this, but there was a bomb that hit the corner of the house, because there were several other refugees that were in that house sleeping. My mom and grandma and aunt and uncle were the only people who survived that bomb that hit that house. And that was the morning when my grandmother said to my mom and my aunt, you guys need to get as far south as you can. And they were near a train track. And they didn't know where the trains were going, but the trains were still running. And my aunt said to my mom, you jump on the train first, because it didn't stop. You jump on first, and then you pull me up. And because my mom had run track in school, she ran, jumped on the train, and grabbed it. I mean, it's like from a storybook.
I know
it. Grabbed my aunt from the arm with the baby on her back and pulled her into the train, and they sat in that train until it stopped, and it ended up stopping in Busan, and that's where they got out, and that's where my mom spent the next 2 years of the war in an orphanage.
It's a remarkable story, Priscilla, and I find it absolutely inspiring, and anyway, I just wanted to share that. Let's go back over here to our kids and their education. I know that this is on your heart, Priscilla Ron. What about masking of our kids? I don't like to see our children masked, just because you miss so much of being able to see people's reactions to things. Also, it's a way to figure out safety or danger. I'm concerned about all this masking, Priscilla.
It's definitely a concern for me, especially as a parent. But they are a effective during this time where, you know, we want to, you know, control the spread, but we do need to put in a lot of breaks for children. I think it, like, there's no solid answer. If we're going to go to in person, when we're talking about solutions, I think that's one of the things that will help teachers and some parents feel comfortable. Like, okay, so I come from a culture, in Korean culture, where masks are pretty common. So it's not a deal breaker for me, but I definitely think that we need to be considerate of all of the things that you're concerned about with, right? There's got to be a way where we're able to identify students. So in a lot of our schools where we have student IDs that are mandatory hung around their neck, so we know if there's an actual student or adult that belongs in the building as a safety issue, that's something that we can do. So I think there's a way where we can compromise with the masks so that it's not a deal breaker for going back to in-person.
Okay, Priscilla, what about a free market solution to this? If I'm a parent that first of all, I would like my kids to have in-person learning and not have to be masked up and not be sitting behind plexiglass, you know, little cubicles. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get to pre-COVID where we were living more free. What about if we had a school that said we offer that, and then we have another school that offers, you know, a different solution for people that are super, super concerned about COVID and teachers that are super, super concerned? It seems like there could be a free market solution. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, I love that idea, because there's no one size fits all. I've always felt that way about education and about life, like differentiate. There's nothing wrong, and I don't like to see people demonized for saying, I don't want to wear a mask. I feel confident about taking care of my health, right, and my immune system, and I want my children to breathe, you know, clean air. I think that
that there's a place for parents to advocate for that, for sure.
Speaking of clean air, I just finally thought of this. Clean air has been at the forefront of our conversations regarding pollution, and clean air has just been something that we want to aspire to. And a friend of mine had said, when wearing these masks, you are breathing back in some of the things that you have tried to expel. And here I'm thinking, here we've been working towards clean air, and now we're putting masks on everybody where they may be breathing back in, you know, some of the things they were trying to expel. That's just an editorial comment on my part. You don't have to say anything on that, Priscilla. We've got about 4 minutes. What's that?
I said, I've heard the same thing too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. We've got about 4 minutes left. And again, I'm concerned that the school year 2020 and 2021 may be a lost year for many of our kids. And there's an old saying, you can't get third grade back. What are we going to do about this?
You know, I think that's the million-dollar question. Our legislators are going to have to make a decision about whether or not we're going to have standardized testing this spring, because we did not have CMAS last year. I mean, we have to be accountable. We have to know where we are. We don't know how deep the damage is and how the long repercussions, right, of COVID with education. That's the part that is scary. And so there's conversations about, do we extend the school year over the summer to really reach those that have been hardest hit, the students that we haven't been able to have consistent contact with? Are colleges and universities going to change their entry requirements and what they're looking for? So there's all of these conversations. Everybody needs to come to the table, K-12, teachers unions, higher ed, CDE, policymakers. Everybody needs to sit down and talk about, how are we going to know and identify where our students are? Because if we're not tracking them and assessing them, then we don't know where the gaps are, right? So, and you know, we can go all the way up to the federal government, what they're expecting for states, and then the state laws, and then all the way down to the local school officials. So this is a big problem that we're having, because if we don't have accountability, what you end up having are like students who say, well, if I do the work or I don't do the work and I get a no grade, what difference does it make, right?
Right.
And if teachers aren't held accountable for data, then human nature. I mean, teachers are being affected by lack of contact and this excessive screen time and not being around other people. So it's really a complicated issue, but that's why we vote in elected officials, because it's their job to make these decisions. And it's December, and CMAS is supposed to happen in March, April. So teachers need time to plan and figure out, are we going to assess? Are we not going to assess? What are we going to hold kids accountable to? What are we going to hold parents accountable to? And so that's where we are.
Well, and that makes it really difficult. And producer Steve and I were talking about it in the first segment about this legislature is doing a special meeting right now, and they're thinking about doling out money to different businesses in different counties because of the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. But yet, it was their reaction that is causing this disruption with our businesses. It is these bureaucrats and these politicians' reaction to education that is causing these problems. And then I got to think, I'm thinking, okay, here I'm a teacher. I'm trying to do the best I can. I can't get some of these kids to log in. It's very difficult to hold them accountable to try to teach them. And then I'm kind of hearing, okay, politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties, who they're still getting paid, that then they're going to be holding teachers and parents accountable for putting them in a super difficult situation. And instead of trying to get to yes, they're trying to get to no. I'm pretty frustrated about this, Priscilla.
I am too. And it's so damaging. And I want to talk about solutions, but we need to start with the mindset of, yes, we're going to open school in January. Like, if we start with, we're going to open school in January, and then the next conversation piece has to be, well, how do we do that safely? And you have to put safely in quotation marks, because there's no guarantee. So you can't put a threshold on and say, well, if someone tests positive, X number of students test positive, or parents or the community, then that means we're going to shut down schools because a positive.
Well, and we're testing more and more people, so you're going to have more and more positives, right?
Don't tell us the how damaging, right, the virus is becoming with an individual. So it's not really telling us, as a principal who looks at data, right, the data doesn't tell you, the numbers don't tell you everything. You have to dig a lot deeper. So I think we need to have more conversations about how we're going to do this safely.
Okay, Priscilla, Ron, we've got 30 seconds. What's your final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I want to say that parents need to go to their school board meetings, and they need to organize, and they need to be brave and go ahead and stand up for your kids, because it's your child's future that's at stake here. So don't be afraid, but be compassionate and be loving and be caring, because we acknowledge that this is a virus that can do a big number on individuals who get it. And just be empathetic, but stand firm and be pointed in your data. And let's get these kids back in school.
Okay. Priscilla, Ron, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you. And thank you, Helen Mitchell.
You betcha. And our quote for today is from George Washington, his first annual message in 1790 regarding education. He said, "Knowledge is, in every country, the surest basis of public happiness." So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, God bless you. God bless America. And let's pray for a miracle.
Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry.